Welcome to another episode of This Woman Works. I am your host, Mike Patton. And on this episode, I wanted to kind of bring you all into someone that does a lot of different things, wears a lot of different hats, and does it very, very wonderfully. I wanted to bring you all to know Miss Rashana Baldwin. And thank you for coming on this episode.
Thank you for having me, Mike. I'm happy to be a part of this platform.
Thank you. Thank you. And we're going to, you know, allow everyone to kind of come into your world, get to know you and all the wonderful things and the great impact that you are having in the city of Chicago. And of course, stretching beyond that as well. We're going to definitely get into that and more. But of course, I open up every show with the Black Girl Magic moment. And I'll be remiss if I didn't talk about the WNBA draft that just happened. Now, everyone wants to talk about a Caitlin Clark and Cam Brinks and those, you know, and those players, and they're nice players. But I want to kind of keep the attention on Angel Reese, Cardozo, and also on Rekia Jackson. You know, those three women have definitely done some wonderful things. Rekia Jackson probably being the one that people least know, but they know her more now because, of course, she switched outfits at the WNBA draft. She had a red outfit on the carpet and then came in with another outfit on when she was accepting or going up to, you know, acknowledge being drafted by the Los Angeles Sparks, which, you know, happens to be my favorite team in the WNBA. But anyway, yeah, definitely was a great thing to see her game. She's 6'2". She can do everything on the court, very underrated. And I just wanted to kind of give her her props and give her her acknowledgement. Along with, of course, Angel Reese. A lot of people have, you know, feel away and how she does and how she carries herself on the court. They feel like, oh, she should do this, she should do that. But no, she is who she is. She's unapologetic about it. She goes out there and she does her thing the way that she knows how to do her thing. And she will definitely be doing so for the Chicago Sky, along with Miss Cardozo, who is 6'7", came from Brazil when she was 15. Played in Tennessee, actually in East Tennessee for basketball there, was a AAU teammate of her former college teammate, Raven Jackson as well. So definitely, you know, got to pay props to her. Her and Angel will definitely do some wonderful things and bring some excitement to the city of Chicago. And I'm sure Rekia Jackson will definitely bring some excitement to the city of LA. I mean, Rashana, did you get a chance to catch any of the WNBA draft or just any of the excitement? I mean, 2.4 million viewers, I believe, which is a record for the WNBA draft. I mean, did you catch any of it or get to catch any clips of it?
No, I did not. I've been traveling a lot for work and for my profession, but I am excited to see some of the ladies come to Chicago. I love the way they dress. I love how they are on the court. Women get an unfair scrutiny on how we are supposed to act, perform, or even dress. So I love their attitudes. I love her youthfulness. I love the fact that she imitates the wrestler, the musician, who also does the same hand gesture on the court. So I'm happy to see what that brings for the Chicago Sky. We need that in our city, in Chicago. We need the positivity. We need more Black women represented in the WNBA on a higher pay scale. So that's what I focus on. But I saw the clips. I haven't got a chance to tune into the drafts, but I saw the media clips and the media attention and somewhat of the scrutiny. But again, I'm happy for Chicago to receive such great talent.
Definitely. And hopefully one day when they expand the WNBA, which they are talking about now, hopefully Nashville will get a team so I can go out there and watch that team and be a season ticket holder or a media member, one or the other, or maybe both. So definitely looking forward to seeing what happens this WNBA season. I'm very, very excited to watch it, to talk about it. I mean, you know, if you're not watching the WNBA, you're totally missing out on a very, very exciting and competitive league. And I love watching it every summer. It has my attention on the Iron Network, NBA TV, ABC. Yes, if you weren't aware, I know the stations that the games come on because I keep up with them, and I'm usually watching every Friday night. So definitely some great things going on in WNBA, and I'm pretty sure the platform is going to continue to expand with the additional attention the college game receives. Now, of course, we're going to get out of the Black Girl Magic moment. We're going to kind of change gears, and we're going to switch over to you. You are essentially Black Girl Magic as well, with some of the great, wonderful things that you have done over your career. But I want to kind of go back to your youth, your growing up days in Englewood, which is a community in Chicago as well, or, you know, in the Chicago area. How was it growing up in Englewood for you?
Amazing. I didn't experience what you and many others see on TV nationally in terms of the violence. It was definitely there. And I think for any major city, you're going to experience some of the violence. But I grew up as a latchkey kid. From those who don't know, you know, you have the single parent, single mom at home, and you're the responsible young adult, if you will. You become a young adult early on. You have to be self-sufficient. You get a key. You know, you're supposed to come straight home, do your homework. You may not be over the age to stay at home alone, but you're responsible enough to go home, do your homework, make yourself a snack, wait for your parents to come home and do what you're supposed to. I had a great mom, and I still have a great mom. She's, you know, instilled in me a lot of values of self-sufficiency, self-reliance. Growing up on the south side of Chicago isn't easy, but my mom was early on was very active and engaged, knew about the social ills of the world. She's a baby boomer. So she, from the 60s, 70s, was marching with King, you know, very socially active, making sure her kids had a fair shake in life. My mom taught us a lot about resiliency, healthy eating, education, led into a lot of my childhood. She kept us engaged in a lot of activities. When I say activities, I mean like sports. My weekends and weekdays were never full of like nothing. I always had something to do. On Saturdays, I was in swim class, African dance class. Throughout the week, I was in cheerleading. I was in some type of after school enrichment program. And I do think I am lucky when I look at, you know, other friends and colleagues and peers who probably grew up in the same neighborhood, Englewood, you know, other South Side neighborhoods on the city of Chicago, who parents didn't put them in a lot of activities or didn't have the wherewithal to engage their children at such a young age. This is before like the internet and social media. So I could say I grew up at a lot of the city colleges taking those classes, those activities, you know, in a week, like I said, the weekdays, I was always in some type of student council, gymnastics, African dance, cheerleading, South Side of Chicago, single mom, raising four kids, two of which were her biological nephews. So my mom was that type of mom who made sure, it takes a village. We're not going to leave any children behind. So I'll take over these additional two boys, young boys, as well as my own two girls. And my mom was a nurse or RN. So she also taught us about health early on. Like in my household, junk food wasn't a day-to-day thing. That was a treat. She was really like almost rigid, like almost Joe Jackson, you got to eat healthy. Your plate of food needs to look like a rainbow. Like we learned how to cook at a young age. Like she taught us these life skills that I now appreciate as an adult, from eating healthy, from being active, from reading books, from, you know, you have to read a book an hour a day before you can go outside to play. Your plate of food that you're cooking for yourself, you're going to learn how to cook at 10 and 9. It should look like a rainbow. I should see green leafy vegetables on your plate, not macaroni, corn, mashed potatoes, and a piece of meat. Like we would get cursed out, like literally, like when I say like you were made to feel like you were a complete moron for coming to her, showing her your plate of food that had nothing that was medicinal. And that was instilled in me at a young age, at 9, at 10. And I'm appreciative of that because, again, I look at my peers, my colleagues who are in their late 30s, 40, and got a lot of health challenges, who don't eat, you know, green vegetables, don't know certain medicinal benefits of food. I got colleagues who tell me, I don't like water. I don't drink water every day. So that's how my childhood, you know, it was never a dull moment. Total was four of us. I'm the middle child, if you will. Four kids, older sister, two younger brothers, full of activities. Like I said, my childhood was always full of something, enrichment activities, sports, because she wanted to keep us active and healthy. And then also what I realized, most parents, that's a way to keep your kids out of your life. You know, keep them like, I'm going to keep you active. Look, I'm going to keep you in a class until 6 p.m. on a weekday. And then Saturday, I'm going to put you in a sports activity. So I ain't got to see you until maybe 2 o'clock or 12 o'clock on that Saturday. So it was like, dull mind is the devil's playground. My mom's like, I'm coming home from work and I don't want to see y'all until after I had that alone time. Then y'all coming home after me and I'm already home. So that was my childhood, if you will.
Gotcha. Okay. So what was one of the biggest memories you had growing up? Like you said, the last key kid, a lot of different activities, basically learning how to cook at a young age. What was one of the kind of say the biggest memories you had just growing up?
So many. Some of the positive, they were positive, right? I do appreciate growing up in African dance. You know, I studied, my mom put me in African dance at the age of like 8 years old, and I built everlasting relationships. So from the age of like 8 to like 14, 15, I studied African dance. African dance troupe called Alayos Children's Dance Theater here in Chicago. And it was started by one of Montu's founders from the 70s, Alayo Talbert. When Montu, the former African dance that started to come around early in the 70s, 60s. So that organization, Alayo Children's Dance Theater, was named after him when he died in the 80s. And his partner, his dance partner, fellow dance captain, Kamosha Murphy, started Alayo Children's Dance Theater in the late 80s. And I got a chance to be a part of Alayo Children's Dance Theaters in the 90s. So I appreciate experiencing a rich culture of learning the different songs, African dance, and also getting a chance to literally tour and perform around the city of Chicago and even some parts of like the Midwest, like Wisconsin and Indiana. Growing up as a young girl, you know, your body is going through these different changes. So African dance, you know, helped you appreciate your curves. You know, I was always tall. So at 9 years old, I was already probably like 5'6". So, you know, and I was always curvaceous, still very healthy and like, you know, solid, but it started to get curves early on. So African dance helped me appreciate my body. Also helped me, it helped me to channel my introvertness. So I appreciate that. I appreciate those experiences. I appreciate learning about more of my African history, culture, roots. I appreciate being, really submerged in that specific culture and appreciating how our ancestors, you know, were wonderful and did so much for us. I appreciate learning about, you know, not having to conform so much to societal norms, seeing other young girls who had kinky curly hair and wasn't rushing to, you know, put perm in their hair. So it was a lot of things I learned and like gleaned to. Then that came from my mom putting me in those type of enrichment classes, culture classes, dance classes. So I remember those were some favorite memories. I was in Girl Scouts. I loved being in Girl Scouts. So I loved doing a lot of those activities growing up as a kid. So, yeah.
All right. Definitely a lot of memories. I mean, of course, you know, those memories definitely stick with you forever and those lessons do too. But another thing that probably sticks with you is that, you know, you had different dreams when you were a kid. I mean, of course, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a pro football player. That's what I wanted to be growing up. But, of course, it didn't happen. Made it to college, but didn't make it quite to the NFL. So for you, what was something as a kid that you wanted to be?
I thought I was going to be a principal. I remember thinking that, like, early on, I wanted to be a principal. I wanted to run the school. That, like, changed. And then it kept metamorphosing into – then I was going to be the next Debbie Allen and study dance and thought about Juilliard. And this is all in grammar school. And it kept morphing into other things. By the time high school came around, I started saying I wanted to own my own business. My uncle who raised me like his own daughter, I called him my uncle father, uncle daddy, if you will. He was an entrepreneur. a Chicago fireman for 30 plus years, and he became really successful at having his own first one of few owners in the telecom business when landlines was the thing back in the day. Him and like several local entrepreneurs in the state of Illinois began to lobby to be owners of landline companies, phone landline companies, like literally residential. It was monopolized by bigger corporations like Ameritech, Southern Bell. So me seeing my uncle and seeing other people in my family become entrepreneurs, I'm like, I want to be a business owner. So I started saying, I'm going to study business administration. And that was in high school. So I started working for my uncle's phone company in high school. Because after he got a landline phone company, where he was able to redistribute landline services and business landline services, he then opened up his own cell phone company. So he had also then bought into the franchise at the time. I think it was U.S. Cellular. So I was like, I want to run my own business. I saw my uncle do it. I worked in his companies in high school and even college. And then that metamorphosed into journalism. Just seeing how my neighborhood was portrayed in the media, you know, seeing how the stories was told about the South Side of Chicago in a negative light, as kept wanting to, you know, just change that narrative and really, you know, report the story. So I also grew up watching the news a lot with my mom and hearing just how the stories was often portrayed. And that's also, you know, how I also got into the field of like doing a lot of political affairs, external affairs, watching news as a young kid with my mom, listening to news radio. And full circle moment, I ended up working for some of those stations that I grew up watching and listening to, like Fox Chicago News. I ended up interning there, WBON 1690, which is called the Voice of Chicago, the Talk of Chicago, actually. I used to listen to that radio station, get this, at the age of 15, listening to Talk Black Radio. But me going to school, how I learned how to drive, my mom, like I said, she was really, you know, single mom. She made very do use of her time. So I learned how to drive, right? Listening to talk radio. I went to school in the suburbs, like most people. When you're living in the city, you always find a loophole. So I wanted to go to school with my cousins who stayed in the south suburb. I grew up with my cousins, like very close, like most people do. Like they're almost like your second brothers and sisters. And a lot of my aunts and uncles had moved to the south suburbs. So every summer, we would spend so much time at our grandparents' house. Like the grandparents' house was a central meetup, and they moved to the suburbs. They're like, okay, we retire. We had enough of the city life. We're tired of the busy city. So they moved to the south suburbs, which is known as one of the suburbs was Dalton. And the rest of my aunts and uncle my uncle stayed in the city, but the rest of my aunties had navigated to the south suburbs. So every summer and the weekends and holidays, all the grandchildren would meet up at the grandparents' house. Honestly, it was like the Black Hamptons for us, because the suburbs were still the suburbs. This is before all the transition happened with the public housing. They started moving, you know, folks out to the burbs and start to change. It was still pretty much fairly quiet, the Brady Bunch, you know, type of feel out in the suburbs. So back to the story of me learning how to drive. So me going back and forth to school out in the suburbs, I would have to take the bus, and my mom would drive me halfway. Actually, I would drive myself halfway, right? And that's how I used to listen to. She always liked to listen to, you know, talk radio. It wasn't no loud music. She wanted to listen to talk radio first thing in the morning. So she would drive me halfway to the bus terminal, because I had to take the PACE bus, not the normal Chicago Transit. You had the suburban bus route, and it ran every hour. So she's like, you're going to learn how to drive. You're going to get your driving practice. This is how you're going to get on the expressway. And I would listen to WBON 1690, because she was listening to it. In full circle moment, I later, 10, 15 years later, became a host on that exact same station. I was like this. I didn't even think about it. I was like, and some of the personalities were still there. And I was like, wow, I remember listening to this station as a teenager, learning how to drive on the expressway, driving myself to school. So that's how I landed in journalism. I wanted to change the narratives, wanted to really do more advocacy journalism for Black people, wanting to really, you know, highlight the positive stuff that was happening in our neighborhoods that we never see, or oftentimes is overshadowed by the negativity, the violence, the poverty. And from there, that had me active in my neighborhood, right? Wanting to see what I could do to make a difference. That literally, again, full circle moments of what I learned in my childhood and just watching my mom, you know, being active in our neighborhoods, like going to voter registration drives with my mom, you know, helping to campaign for Carol Mosley Braun, the first Black U.S. senator who, you know, worked under the Clinton administration. So a lot of what I learned, you know, is now what I do today as a journalist, as a social entrepreneur, as a senior advisor to different organizations around community engagement, community revitalization, strategic communication. So I do wear a multitude of hats, but it really started with, you know, journalism and community outreach.
Okay. All right. All right. So, you know, definitely you got into a little bit more of what we're going to get into next is find out more about your career and the different things there as well. We're going to find out a little bit more about that and more when we come back from commercial break on This Woman Works with Mike Holt, with your host Mike Patton and a guest Rashawna Baldwin.
EBO Beard Butter and EBO Beard Washers are the best beard grooming products for men worldwide. They help promote growth, keep your beard moisturized and soft, and enhance your overall upkeep of your facial hair. And with the new promo code MPASC10, you can get 10% off of these products. Just go to www.etsy.com/shop/EBO Beard Butter. Again, that's www.etsy.com/shop/EBO Beard Butter. And again, the promo code MPASC10. Again, MPASC10, where you can get 10% off any products except for beard boxes. So treat your beard better today by going to get these EBO, the EBO Beard Butter and EBO Beard Wash.
All right, and we are back. Again, that commercial was brought to you by EBO Beard Butter and Beard Wash. Yes, 10% off with the code MPASC10. Definitely, of course, I know this is This Woman Works, and of course, I know this is a show highlighting Black women, but I know Black women buy a lot of things that Black men use, even when we don't know we need it. So, hey, that's where EBO Beard Butter can definitely come in and help. You know, definitely, you know, somebody with a coarse beard definitely can help you out there. But getting back to the show, kind of want to mention, you mentioned it, and you kind of went into your journalism career and how that kind of got started. And the different things that, you know, the full circle moments as well. But, you know, just to kind of give everyone a kind of rundown, I mean, you've done a few different things. You've worked at NBC, the NBC affiliate, the CBS affiliate. You've worked at a lot of different places. And then also what you've done within that is you've created your own spaces as well. How important was it for you to kind of not only work somewhere for someone, but to create your own spaces within different places that you've been also?
It was survival. If I didn't, I probably wouldn't have been eating. Our dreams will kill you and it will leave you broke. I wanted, traditional route was I'm going to be the next Oprah, you know, Robin Roberts, Gayle King. Yeah. Our field of TV broadcast, specifically broadcast, well, all journalism, broadcast journalism is not easy to break into. So it came, it happened all the, it happened out of necessity. It happened out of just like my hunger to want to work, to want to be present, but also needing to eat, needing to make sure, you know, I was sustaining life. Like I, you know, in our field, you're told, you know, make your demo reel, shop your demo reel around, go to the smaller markets. I did that. And it's a dog eat dog field. You have to look a certain way, speak a certain way. You want to be a certain skin color. And a lot of these smaller markets are not open to Black young, you know, girls and guys. You oftentimes get overlooked in some of these smaller stations are in predominantly white, Southern, you know, racist states. Cities, it's some parts of Illinois that I wouldn't go alone to at night in southern part of Illinois. So I had to pivot. I learned early on. I wouldn't say it was necessarily taught, but it was taught in my household. I had to pivot, and I found myself doing a lot of volunteering. One thing about me, I do have a strong work ethic, and a lot of my colleagues, friends, anyone can attest it. Like, she's everywhere. And he's like, it's one thing to say it's everywhere, but my work is always the same. Like, I'm always in the same space and field. I never tried to be something I was not. One of the things I was taught, or, you know, was told that I have in terms of, you know, just having a great work ethic, I knew how to always make connections. I knew instantly on, I developed mentors. I instantly was finding myself in spaces and places with some key makers of the city of Chicago, Illinois, because I had friends, mentors. So I was always, you know, seeking advice, you know, asking to be mentored, using my skills as a journalist to make that connection. So I can say my skill set and my studying of journalism did teach me how to make connections. It did teach me how to get that story. And that story was, how can I work for you? How can I assist you? And that turned into and manifested into developing clients. I started my own consultancy firm, or just my own business, right? As Baldwin Media Group, LLC, because in the field that I was, you know, in the space and place that I, you know, do community work, community engagement, community organizing. I never say I'm an activist because I'm not. It just all kept being in the same space of what I do. I wanted to change the narrative of how the South and West Side of Chicago is being promoted and talked about nationally. I wanted to also address what was happening in my neighborhoods in terms of the disinvestments, whether it was housing, education, health, or gun violence. And I also wanted to show up for others and, you know, be civically engaged. So those was always my three things that I was doing. And it just manifested into, okay, Roshana, you have these connections at the media. Could you get the media to cover this specific cause in our community? Could you get the media to come out and cover this specific, you know, coding event that we're doing for young children? Could you get the media to come out and show some of the good work, some of the sustainable work, not just the sports, not just us passing out turkeys? Can you come get the media to cover this coding class that we're teaching young girls and boys on how to, you know, do web coding? Yeah, let's shine a light on some of the positive work. Let's shine a light on some of, you know, the households that do have moms and dads in the city of Chicago on the South Side. Let's shine a light on, even if it is the single moms who are going to work every day with their kids. They're not surviving. They're necessarily, you know, dodging bullets. That's not the narrative. The narrative is, this is a productive citizen of the city of Chicago who just happens to be a single mom or a single dad. Let's change that narrative and show the great work that they're doing. Let's show how this neighborhoods need more investment. So that's how me pivoting and just having, you know, just having to like do my own thing. I was always taught that, you know, and start to learn that from mentors, like, you only have to start creating some of your own opportunity. And I also started to learn that in journalism school. I went to school at the University of Chicago, UIC. Then I went and got my master's degree in broadcast journalism, and using the skill sets that I learned in school of how to get that lead, of how to stay active, you know, find out what's going on, keeping in the know, and also how I can help and use my voice to influence what some of my white colleagues didn't know about these neighborhoods. So I think that's how I start to do my own thing. And like, I have this body of work, I have these connections. How can I make that work for me? How can I create another opportunity, another door? So it became external affairs. It became doing PR work. It became, hey, can you advise me on these certain issues? Absolutely. That became a business. Sometimes in our space as Black people, specifically in the space of community advocacy, community activism, we don't see a way to monetize that in terms of, if I'm being your public relations person, your advisor, that's a job. You're relying on me to advise you to show up a certain way. You're relying on me to help you deliver the best talking points to a specific set of individuals. You're relying on me to know what's happening in that neighborhood. You're relying on me to use my social capital to get that elected official to pick up the phone. You have to pay me for that. You can't exploit me. You have to pay me for that. And I had to really push back on folks. I've done work for free. You know, of course, I cut my teeth. I interned as much as possible. That's also how I learned how to pivot and do my own thing. I wasn't the person who, after I graduated and had one internship, I'm not going to do an internship. That's how I landed some other jobs, by doing multiple internships even after, you know, graduate school. I was doing an internship at CBS TV. I was working at CBS Radio part-time, and then I was also in grad school. So I was that person, like, I want the experience. And if I can get this experience for free, y'all, intern for you, but I'm going to get something out of that internship. I'm going to take, I'm going to get these contacts, and I'm going to get these resources. So.
Okay. All right. So one thing I did want to ask you as well is, when did you reach the point where you were just like, okay, I can do this? So I know there's always that one pivotal point where, you know, you're kind of thinking, can I really do this or not? Can I make a career out of this? And then you reach that point where you have that aha moment, like, yeah, I can do this.
I still have those days, those doubts. The aha moment is when it was like out of necessity. I don't think it was ever an aha moment that I could do it. It was like I was already doing it. I'm already doing it. I need to start getting paid for it. It was like, I'm already doing it. I'm already doing the free work. I'm already knocking down the doors. I'm already showing up consistently, reliantly, authentically. I need to get paid for it. And I think more so the full circle moment was now having to look myself in the mirror and say, I deserve to be paid for this. I deserve to, you know, my skill set, my time, my talent, my social capital, my ability to get almost any elected official on the phone or their chief of staff on the phone, I should get paid for that. So I think the moment was like, let me sit down and like really talk to my mentors, my colleagues, like how do I monetize that? How do I charge for that? What does that look like? Oh, that's like, you're an advisor. That's an advisor, or you're a publicist. It was, you know, mentors and friends. No, that's called external affairs. That's so you, when someone asks you, when you have your, you know, community people or residents ask you to write a press release, hey, it was my colleague to say, no, you need to start charging for that. Your company is called Baldwin Media something. I have several mentors in different spaces. Like, no. And these elected officials want you to go, you know, they have a budget. So I think it was that. It wasn't like an aha moment. It was like, I was already doing the work. It was like, but now you need to start getting paid for it.
Mm-hmm. I totally understand that. Trust me, I understand. So I got to ask, you know, of course you've done TV, the radio, the PR, done all these different things, worn all these different hats. What's one of your favorite stops along the way, or your favorite things that you've done just in general over the time you've been doing everything?
I don't know. I don't know.
Almost like you can't name just one, right?
I don't know if I have a favorite.
They're all your babies, right?
You said what?
They're all your babies, right?
Yeah, they're all my babies. I don't know. Favorite moment? Meeting celebrities? Right. I don't know. I don't even know if that's a favorite. I think a favorite moment is when I'm at the table, when I sit back and I was like, damn. I just went to Congress yesterday. I just literally met members of Congress. I think those become the moments that I look back on. It's like, wow, I just was invited to be a part of Chance the Rapper's, you know, new like docu-series or documentary that he was launching. And like 4 years ago, he had bought a newspaper to put him out of business. It was some like racial undertones, and he ended up like, it was one of his projects that he never got off the ground, or I think he just shelved. So I look back at, you know, maybe months later and say, wow, I literally was a part of the Elderly Alderman series that he started to produce with, I can't think of the guy's name, who's a comedian from Comedy Central. But it's like, so it's like later looking back at when I realized I was in rooms with some like powerful people, some influential people. It's like, damn. So when I'm in a moment, I'm like, oh my God, this is so much fun. It's like later, it's like, damn, I was asked to be a part of X, Y, and Z. So I think when I get a chance to look back and reflect at the rooms that I was in or the people I got a chance to actually talk to, and when I say talk to, the people I got a chance to actually give subject matter expertise to, is one thing to just say I met such and such, but it's like, not only did I meet this high, powerful, famous, whoever, I got a chance to add to whatever they was working on or be a part of their project or brief them. So I think it's that, looking back, if I was to scroll through my social media platform or look at interviews or things that I would done, I'm like, not only did I just take a picture with that person, I actually had a conversation with them. And they probably still remember who I am.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, of course, I'm not going to let you get out of here without, you know, giving some advice and some words to people that may be coming along after you. But first, of course, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll get into that on This Woman Works.
A shift. A shift is something that happens and changes the dynamics. And that's what happened when Garrett Logistics was born. After 10 years as a sales pro in the logistics world of sporting goods, John Garrett decided to pivot to the world of freight and start a brokerage. So you're saying to yourself, why trust Garrett Logistics? Well, Garrett Logistics helps shippers improve overall workflow, along with increased on-time pickup and delivery percentages. Last-minute loads, multi-drop pickups, and more are part of the services with Garrett Logistics. They're available Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., all times Central Standard Time. So give them a ring at 615-400-8484. That's 615-400-8484. Or you can email them at john@garrettlogistics.co or visit their website at garrettlogistics.co. Garrett Logistics, where the motto is, it's not just freight to us, it's your business.
All right, and we are back on This Woman Works. And before, of course, we go to the speed round, which is the last part of the show, I wanted to kind of give you a little moment to give out maybe some advice or someone that may be trying to do and wear the multiple hats that you're wearing, which, you know, of course, again, folks, she's done TV, she's done radio, PR, written press releases, you name it, Rashana Baldwin has done it, has been there, and could probably give you a whole story about it. So what advice would you give for anyone that's trying to kind of come behind you and do some of the type of things that you have done over your career?
Okay. My advice would be develop mentors. If you're looking for, and how do you develop mentors, right? That's very vague. Any field that you are looking to get into, if you specifically this field, right? You need to go volunteer. You need to reach out to that individual. If they're at a specific station or a company, you need to find out how you can either work for that company as a volunteer first, how you can be of value. So first, figure out how you can be of value to any person that you're about to ask to mentor you or that you want to work for. And that looks like volunteering, showing up first and doing some free work, showing up authentically, you know, showing up without someone having to tell you to do so. That's how you develop the relationship, by, you know, volunteering your time first. And then asking whoever in that specific field, would they be willing to, before you even ask them to mentor you, invite them to have coffee. Ask them, can you have a 15-minute chat with them to learn from them? Never come off as offensive or over pushy, but you have to be that person who will be resilient. How I've always made contacts and followed up with individuals, you do have to get their emails. Like, not everyone is going to give you their direct contact information. When I was always seeking someone or something, if I couldn't get Michelle Obama's phone number and email, believe you me, I had her secretary's email or her chief of staff's email and phone number, and I bothered them. I followed up with them. That's how I learned how to navigate this space of, you know, external affairs, PR, entrepreneurship, trying to find an insider contact, someone who either looked like me or someone I could seek advice from. And then I developed those relationships and got a chance to get mentors. Once they saw me show up authentically, no one wants to necessarily attach their name to you until they know who you are and know that you are not going to embarrass them. So I learned that way through volunteering, showing up, being active, making sure my resume matched who I said I was. I never jumped from field to field, as I, you know, just explained over the last 45 minutes of how all of what I did is all related to each other. So I would say volunteer your time. Get if any cause or activity or job you're interested in, you have to volunteer for them and show how you can be of value and seek out those mentors from there. Develop a Rolodex of contacts by showing up to their different spaces and places. Each time I wanted to make a contact with an elected official, I attended their fundraisers. I showed up at their, you know, family fun days. You know, I volunteered with them. That made them see me. I didn't just go ask for a job. I didn't just say, can you be my mentor? They kept seeing me show up in spaces and places authentically. I joined boards because any job or skill set I wanted to learn that I wasn't going to necessarily go back and pay another $30,000 to get another degree in, I found ways to gain knowledge. I feel like I'm always seeking knowledge, always reading books, always trying to find a webinar or a seminar that I can learn about versus trying to go, you know, spend more money. So anything I was trying to learn or seek out, I studied it. I still study journalism. I still study public relations. I'm always going to different conferences or different seminars similar to NABJ. You know, I feel like I'm somewhat established in my career, but it's also still a lot of workshops and seminars. And at those seminars and workshops, those are the key opportunities when you can connect with these anchors. Mm-hmm. Are walking right past you. So I show up in those spaces and places where they're going to be at, but I make sure I'm a value to that person and I'm always seeking knowledge. I'm never too old. I'm never too, you know, experienced to learn something, to take a class, to do something for free. I make sure though it is a benefit for me. If I'm learning something or if I want to experience something, it's going to be a benefit, vice versa. It's not just me showing up to be at a place to take pictures. What did I learn? What did I gain? Did I get another set of knowledge? So I'm always, you know, I think I use that time very wisely to always make it reciprocal. A lot of my relationships are very reciprocal. I do stuff for free all the time for colleagues or friends, but it's reciprocity. If you want me to go host your event, right? I've had people ask me to host something. So it's like, okay. You can't pay me. Are you going to give me a stipend? Are you going to validate my parking? Am I going to get a meal? Like, if I'm going to show up and host your event or be a speaker, are you going to put me on your website? So I learned how to do the bartering system. I learned how to do, like I just said, bartering and making a reciprocity. So that's how I think I've been able to be successful. You know, I can easily say, oh, $500 to host your event. You know, I understand we all are trying to eat and make a living and, you know, really grow our businesses. But I always make sure everything I do is reciprocity and I really am guarded with my time. So I would say definitely develop a mentor, volunteer, anything that you want to be successful in, study it. Google is free. You can find classes, workshops, PDFs. You should never be too proud or too busy that you can't pick up a book. You can't jump in a quick seminar. You can't go research something. I've reached out to people out of state to learn more about what they're doing. So I would say that's my advice. And develop a mentor in that specific space and place. If you can't find a mentor, volunteer for that specific organization. If they, you know, folks say to me, I don't have $150 to go to this gala. Did you see if you can volunteer? That you see if you could, you know, help them collect tickets for the first hour and then possibly, you know, show up. I don't, you know, I've never been that type of person. Like, I ain't going to do that, but I do say I've paid my dues. I know when to say, no, I have someone for you. No. So, and also join board. When I want to learn about a specific, like, I'm on a couple boards and I want to learn about finance, I joined the finance committee just to understand how to read documents. So that I hope that advice made sense.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. And of course, you know, last question I do have for you before we go again to the speed round. How important was it for you to be an example in your profession for Black women in just the city of Chicago and your neighborhood in Englewood?
Very important. I always want to show up in a positive, kick-ass, respectable way. I never want to be the cliche or the stereotype. And I'm always pushing against that narrative of, no, I didn't dodge bullets growing up on the South Side of Chicago. I had a single mom who was healthy, educated, college educated, and raised four kids by herself. So I am an example of what a resilient Black woman is. I wasn't a at-risk youth. I make sure my labels, my titles, and how I show up is positive, strong. I'm not, beaten down. I'm not worn down. I'm not oppressed. I'm resilient. So I think that's always the best way to represent anyone coming from the South Side of Chicago, specifically a Black woman, to push back on that narrative, to always make sure that you are in control of how people see you. People could say what they want, but it's always making sure that you continue to be authentic and consistent across the board. And that's, I think, I continue to show that by just doing the work that I do. Whatever I put out on social media, whether I put out in interviews, always telling the specific story. How hard is it growing up on the South? It wasn't hard. I mean, I stated at the beginning of this interview, growing up in any metropolitan city, you're going to have your own set of issues, but that didn't deter me from being amazing. That didn't deter me from being great. That didn't, of course, I had challenges. Of course, I grew up next to the violence, but I didn't let that become the dominant narrative, if you will. So I think it's always important to maintain, and you control your image, you control your narrative. And I've had, to be honest, individuals and even, media interviews, like, tell me about how was it growing up? It was great. Yeah, it was great growing up in Inglewood. Yup. Yeah. Yeah, it was great growing up in Inglewood. I didn't dodge bullets. Yeah, I learned how to eat healthy. My mom was a registered nurse. So I didn't just, it was limited grocery stores, but I had a mom who taught me at an early age how to cook. Yeah, it was great. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely gave a lot of great words, a lot of great advice as well. During this entire time, of course, we want to end it on an interesting note to get people to get to know you maybe a little bit more outside of all the things that you do. And that's where the speed round comes up. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Your favorite song to listen to.
Drake, started from the bottom, now I'm here.
Oh, okay. All right. He's gotten the news a lot lately. Well, let's see. One actress that you would peg to play you in a biopic.
Sanaa Lathan.
Okay. All right. One of your idols growing up.
My idols were Brandy and Venus Williams. Okay. And Serena and Aaliyah.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Favorite part of your job or jobs?
The favorite part of my jobs is being financially independent and being able to set my own schedule and travel and work at the same time.
Okay. All right. Well, I know Chicago, they call it the second city, but of course, that is the city that is buzzing with sports. So I'm going to ask you, do you have a favorite sport to watch?
Of course, I watch basketball a little bit here and there. The Chicago Bulls, they need a lot of help. But, I still love Chicago Bulls. Every now and again, I may check out the White Sox, the baseball team, team on the South Side. So between those two, and I check out the Chicago Bears.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm a Bulls fan. I'm a Bulls fan, and a Cubs fan. So I do have two teams that are actually from Chicago. So
yes,
yeah. WGN was very, very, very helpful in helping me find the teams that I now love today. So
nice. That was one of the gazillion internships I had post college. I interned at WGN 7:20 a.m.
Okay. All right. Biggest pet peeve?
People who are late and don't give you an excuse. Okay.
I hear you there. I hear you there. I remember my college coach, he said, if you got to be there at 7 o'clock, being there at 7 o'clock is too late. That's what I used to hear all the time. Let's see, one person you'd love to have dinner with to kind of pick their brain or just have a discussion with. Could be famous, could be deceased, could be living.
Could it be two people?
I'll give you that one. Yeah.
It'll be two people. This may be a little weird. Meghan Markle, she's a little fascinating. And then Harold Washington, the first black mayor of Chicago. He's dead.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Let's see. Best R&B song of all time to you is?
It's in my head. Mary J. Blige. She's not getting sued. It's one now that that someone sampled. I think Bad Boy Diddy sampled. I can't think of the song. I don't know if it's I'm Going Down. You should know this.
It was that one.
It made news a couple weeks ago that her song from the early 90s that she didn't produce.
Oh, goodness. I'm trying to think of the name myself, but she's got so many hits. I mean, I could go all over the place there. But hey, we're going to stick with Mary J. Blige. We'll go there. Best vacation you ever went on?
Oh, my God. Cuba.
Cuba. Okay.
I went to Cuba in 2019. Like I said, I'm resilient. How did I get to Cuba? Because I'm resilient. That's the time when Americans couldn't go. Guess who went? I did. Cuba was so much fun. Cuba, hot, amazingly hot, affordable. I mean, they're a communist country. It was so much fun to see so many people that look like us with straight hair. It was fun. You detach when you go to Cuba because you're not connected to the electronics, the internet, because everything is government controlled. So you can't just turn on the TV real quick. Your cell phones don't work over there, period. Like, you can't go get a subscriber and you can't even put WhatsApp. You have to, their internet is limited. So you had to go to the internet parks. So Cuba, wow. Cuba, you had to, you disconnect because it's a government ran country. It's a communist country. Right. The Castro still pretty much have a tight grip on that country. It was fun. We got a chance to party. We got a chance to, my friends, she thought we were just going to walk around and do some walking tours. We went to the club.
All right. Last thing I'll ask you is, what is the best thing to do in Chicago, in your opinion?
The best thing is to do, we got a lot of festivals. Go to some of the music festivals. We got Lollapalooza coming up. I would say if you would
be there at the same time as NABJ.
Yeah, Lollapalooza. I haven't been, but if you're young and you love music like that, Lollapalooza. And then our house picnic. If you're a house head, where house started here and since became a global phenomenon, I would say go to the house picnic on the south side of Chicago. Check out Lollapalooza and hit up some of our local festivals, our neighborhood festivals around the city. We have 77 neighborhoods, so we're always having different street festivals.
Okay. All right. Well, that is the speed round. Hopefully everyone got to know you through that and also throughout all the different wonderful things and experiences that you allowed us to bring the light and talk to on this episode of This Woman Works. I want to thank you for coming on this episode. I also want to give you space to kind of tell everyone where they can find you on social media and anything that you may be working on currently.
Well, I am available on all social medias as well as my website, RashaunaBaldwin.com. I know you'll put the link up somewhere. And pretty much that's all my social medias. My ex, aka Twitter, Instagram, Facebook is all my name, Rashauna Baldwin. What do I have working? What am I working on? Everything. Everything. I'm relaunching my podcast, if you would. That's what I've been working on. Working on the relaunch of my podcast, Someone You Need to Know, so I can still be doing great interviews like yourself and delivering content. I want to get back out to delivering some great content and highlighting influential people who are doing the work in areas like neighborhood heroes that you don't hear about, but they're doing some amazing kick-ass work. So I want to relaunch that. And then I'm doing another marathon. This time it's going to be a half marathon. I'm doing the Chicago Bank of America half marathon in June. Last year, I did the Bank of America 26.3 all miles. So that's what I'm working on. I'm training for the upcoming marathon. I'm going to keep traveling around the world while I have this financial freedom.
Got you. Wow. You know, marathon. I do good to do like a 10K. But yeah, marathon, hey, we are all not able. But hey, it sounds like you are living life and living life abundantly.
Yes, stay active. Don't think of me as the superstar of doing the marathons. I think doing a 5K, 10K, as we get older, stay active. Age amazingly, not gracefully, like go out with a bang. So if you do 5Ks, keep doing them.
Right. I'm probably going to do the Titans. The Titans have a 5K every year. I'm probably going to jump out there and do that. Hopefully this year. We'll see what happens. But of course, for those that don't know me, you know me now. I'm the host of This Woman Works, Mike Patton. You can find me on the artist formerly known as Twitter. Yeah, that's how I throw that out there. But the artist formerly known as Twitter at MikePatton82. That's MikePTTON82. Of course, throwing honor and praise towards Prince, who was one of the greatest artists of all time. Of course, you can find me on Threads, and you can find me on Instagram at @the_general_mp. Of course, This Woman Works, you can find on YouTube. You can also find on Spotify and other listening platforms as well. I want to thank you all for tuning in to this episode of This Woman Works. We are out. Peace.